Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, December 18th. Group to discuss land's future employment by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Election Commission will hold a meeting Friday to discuss Elections Administrator Deborah Land's position following multiple issues with the Midland ISD bond election and subsequent recount. The Election Commission is made up of the county judge, tax assessor collector, county clerk, and the chairs for the Republican and Democratic parties. Tax assessor collector Karen Hood said she called for the meeting because he, County Judge Terry Johnson, wouldn't. She said state statute allows for a meeting if three commission members agree to it in the absence of a call for the meeting by the county judge. I just think it is our responsibility as a commission to meet and have a discussion, Hood said. She said commission members would discuss the events of the November 5th election as well as Land's future employment, though she said she has not discussed the matter with the other commission members and does not know their opinions on it. Johnson said he does not agree with calls from residents to terminate Land. I'm being bombarded, he said. Folks want her head on a spear. That's not going to solve anything. He said he believes the past election provided an opportunity for the elections office to learn from their mistakes and correct them in the future. I've learned my best lessons through my mistakes, and I never made those mistakes again, Johnson said. Land declined to comment on the meeting and what would be discussed. I presume what they're going to talk about, but I don't know for sure, she said. Commissioner Luis Sanchez of Precinct 3 said if the Election Commission does not make a decision regarding Land's position, he will put an item on the upcoming Commissioner's Court agenda to discuss and possibly take action on her position. The next Commissioner's Court meeting is scheduled for Monday. Notice of the Election Commission meeting was posted a day after 836 ballots that were not included in an earlier recount were discovered in a previously unknown box. Land said Monday those ballots were placed in a metal tin box rather than the blue ballot boxes that were used this election cycle. Because of this, the elections office believed the box was empty until Thursday when an employee realized that it was not, she said. Representatives for the Special Purpose Action Committees, We Choose Our Future and Better Bond for Midland, which are for and against the bond respectively, have indicated they will file to contest the election. The Election Commission meeting is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday at the Midland County Annex. SPAC's Joiner, Accurate Vote Count is Number One Goal, by Brandy Addison. Representatives from both Special Purpose Action Committees announced they will contest the election after a new ballot box was discovered to contain 836 votes from the November general election. By law, an entire Special Purpose Action Committee cannot petition for an election contest. However, the representatives of a committee can, and any taxpayer could petition to contest any ballot item, County Attorney Russell Malm said. Midland ISD Board President Rick Davis told the MRT he also has plans to contest the election, even though he would be required to contest against himself. As I read the statute, any individual in the county can do so, and I'm an individual in the county, so I'm doing so, Davis said Monday. I think it's important to note that even I, as an individual, want these votes tallied and I want them included so we can find the true results of the bond election. Co-chairs of the pro-bond We Choose Our Future, Christine Foreman and Dave Joyner, said they also want to discover a true, accurate count. That's obviously the number one goal, Joyner said. If we can be confident in that total and allow ourselves to be comfortable with the chain of custody of the missing ballots and know they may not be interfered with, then I would be comfortable with what that is. Joyner said representatives from both SPACs and Davis will not be contesting jointly. They will be treated as a group at court, though they each will have their own legal counsel. The representatives and Davis believe there would be reasonable evidence for the judge to move forward. Foreman said she does not expect that contesting the election would require a revote. If we have the ballots available to tally, why would we need a revote? Foreman said. Davis agreed and said that he does not believe there will be a revote. He said Texas election law provides a way to tally the votes through an election contest. He said he is certain the court will give permission to open the new ballot box and add the newly found ballots to the numbers from the recount. He said he expects those contesting the election will go quickly before the court so the outcome can be settled as soon as possible. If the tally during the election contest determines that the bond fails, and now we have reason to believe that this is the most likely result, my hope is that we can hit the reset button and begin the process anew and reach out to those who said they recognize a bond is needed but wanted a different bond, Davis said. Elections Office is at Center of Community's Attention by Brandy Addison. The Midland County Elections Office has been the center of the community's attention for more than a month. Since the outcome of Midland ISD's $569 million bond flipped on November 12th, when final tabulations took place, the reality was the bond was failing the entire time, even on election day when I reported that it had won by 12 votes. No one knew that it was necessary to add the mail-in ballots report to the cumulative results, which were in fact not cumulative. The office became even bigger news when the bond outcome did flip from failing, when the recount tallies show that it won by 11 votes, with an 820-vote discrepancy when compared to the election day tabulations. That discrepancy later widened to 840 votes. For nearly 3 weeks, it was unknown why the discrepancy existed. However, a ballot box was discovered Thursday during a ballot count, and we learned Monday that the box contained 836 ballots from this election. They are likely the answer to the discrepancy, though that cannot be 100% confirmed. Since reporting heavily on all the twists and turns that have come with this election, you can imagine all the questions I have been asked by people wanting clarity. Trust me, I understand it's confusing. Below are the questions I've been asked most. The answers are based on what I've heard from county and election officials, Board President Rick Davis, and representatives of the two special purpose action committees, We Choose Our Future and Better Bond for Midland. Were the ballots from the new box counted? Yes and no. The 836 ballots found in this newly discovered box were tabulated by the electronic machines on November 5th, Election Day, according to Elections Office officials. However, because the box had not yet been discovered, when the recount took place on November 22nd, those ballots were not tallied then. This is likely the source of the 820-vote discrepancy, which widened to 840 votes on Thursday. How was this box discovered? Elections Administrator Deborah Land said the box was discovered on Thursday by an employee who was organizing a room. The employee realized the ballot box was not empty as office staff had believed. The box was just one of the two boxes that contained the overflow ballots from early voting at the elections office. These boxes were actually two metal tins and not blue boxes like the rest. Because the office has several spare tins that are empty, Land said she did not realize this tin contained any ballots, and it did not make the move to a storage facility with the other 17 ballot boxes. She did report the other overflow tin, and those ballots were tallied in the recount. was this box marked? How did counting teams do a recount knowing a box was missing? This box did have a serial number and was sealed, but it was not reported in the chain of custody reports, as every other ballot box had been reported. Counting teams did not know the box was missing. Christine Foreman, co-chair of Pro Bond Committee We Choose Our Future, said she and others asked Land multiple times if a box was missing when learning of the 820-vote difference, and Land said no. Foreman said the counting teams double-checked every serial number against the report to make sure every box given had been accounted for. Did Midland ISD or the school board have any physical contact with any of the ballot boxes? Not to my knowledge. Elections officials said all boxes were stored in a locked facility and were removed only when representatives from both committees and the county judge were present. The mystery box was not stored in that facility, since the office was not aware of its connection to this election, so there is no reason to believe the district or board would handle a box they believed to be empty. Did the recount have to be canvassed on November 26th? Yes. Keith Ingram, Director of Elections for the Secretary of State's office, said MISD had to canvass these votes as soon as practicable, and the district should not have waited for clarity to certify the results. He said the district and both special purpose action committees have been in contact with him throughout the election process and all have done everything appropriately. Will finding these votes change the outcome of the bond? No. Once the election is certified, the outcome cannot be changed, despite anything that was revealed in the investigation process. The results, however, can be contested, and that could change the outcome. What will happen next? Will a revote take place? Representatives from Better Bond for Midland and We Choose Our Future and Board President Rick Davis said they plan to contest the election as individuals. All have agreed they do not expect a revote to take place because the number of ballots will match closely. Davis said he expects that in contesting the election, a judge will permit the tallying of these new ballots to be added to the recount. He said it appears the voting machines were correct and the bond failed, but it now must be determined in this process. Joyner additionally said the ballots from this box could not be tallied without completing an election contest, and to ensure every ballot is counted in the true result is one of the reasons he and Foreman opted to contest. Why are representatives from We Choose Our Future and Rick Davis also contesting? Special purpose action committees as a whole cannot contest an election. The statute does clarify that any individual in the county can contest an election. This includes the school board president, who will have to contest against himself, and representatives from We Choose Our Future. Christine Foreman and Dave Joyner have said their number one priority is getting the true results of the election. Joyner said, though he does want the bond to pass, he wants it to pass fairly. Davis said he also wants to find the true results, despite what the outcome may show. What happens if the bond fails during the election contest? If the bond fails, Davis said he wants to hit the restart button and start anew. MISD trustee Brian Murray agreed. Davis said he does not expect a new bond will be up for vote in May. The election would have to be called in mid-February, and he said that is too quick to ensure everything is done right. It is, however, possible for the November election. Murray and Davis have said they would want to get more support from the community. Davis said he would want to begin by reaching out to those who stated that they recognize a bond is needed but did not support this particular one. He said the biggest change he would make while creating this new bond proposal would be presenting interim reports to the community on the progress being made with the planning committee. He said he would prefer to present periodic reports to the community and get feedback rather than working on it and waiting until the end to present.
Health Briefs. Pediatric Clinic to Receive Recognition. Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center Pediatric Clinic in Odessa has been recognized for its program initiatives that support children and youth in foster care. The clinic at 701 West 5th Street will be designated as a Foster Care Center of Excellence at a ceremony planned for 3 p.m. today, according to a press release. It will be the sixth clinic to receive the designation from Superior, a managed health care company. To receive the designation, a provider must meet criteria that include quality improvement initiatives, program processes, and staff requirements, according to the release from TTUHSC. Midland Health Events. Way to Success Informational Seminar, 4 p.m. Thursday, Midland Memorial Hospital. Sunday Adkins, 638-8081. sunday.adkins@midlandhealth.org. To register, go to midlandhealth.org and click on Classes and Events. COM Aquatics. COM Aquatics, 3003 North A Street, offers paddleboard classes 7:15 p.m. Mondays. Boards don't have to be reserved. Finding a doctor. Access to a primary care provider is one mission of Midland Health. Residents who need help finding a physician or setting up an appointment can call 221-3627. 221-DOCS. Hope Chest. Hope Chest is a program that provides support for women during their pregnancy and after their baby is born. Hope Chest allows mothers and mothers-to-be to earn necessities such as diapers, wipes, clothing, and car seats through a point system. Points are earned by attending prenatal appointments and childbirth classes, and once the baby is born, moms continue to earn points at pediatrician visits until the child turns two. The program office is at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. For more information or to enroll in the program, call 221-1150. To make a monetary donation or donate brand new baby items to Hope Chest, call the March of Dimes office at 416-7310. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 6-8 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 6-8 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Helpline for long-term or disabled care. The Texas Department of Aging and Disability Services has a toll-free number residents can call to obtain information on services for the disabled or long-term care. For more information, call 855-937-2372. Contact your hospital district representative. Midland Memorial Hospital, 400 Roslyn Redfern Grover Parkway, Midland, Texas, 79701. Phone 221-1111. Website, www.midlandhealth.org. Facebook, www.facebook.com/Midland Memorial Hospital. Twitter, twitter.com/Midland Memorial. Midland Memorial President Russell Myers, 221-1584. Directors, District 1, Tracy Green, District 2, Dwayne Tomlin, District 3, Larry Mercer, District 4, Link Grimes, District 5, Carrie Chaplin, District 6, Joe Kowalski, District 7, Jeffrey Beard. This is for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. Obituaries. Eugenia Mary Castillo Carrasco. Eugenia Mary Castillo Carrasco joined our Lord Jesus Christ in heaven peacefully on November 30th, 2019. She was born November 2nd, 1926 in Cisco, Texas, to Pedro and Maria Castillo. She is preceded in death by her husband, Jesse, her son, Jesse Jr., her daughter, Anna Gutierrez, and her granddaughter, Connie Gutierrez. Her parents and five of her siblings, Socorro Ruiz, Roy Castillo, Pedro Castillo Jr., Jesus Castillo, and Juanita Galindo. She is survived by her son-in-law, Augustin Gutierrez, daughter-in-law, Ava Carrasco, 5 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren, her sisters Amelia C.R. Navarrete, Maria Elena Raymond Ochoa, and Rosa Enriquez, and numerous nieces and nephews. Services to be held at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church on Saturday, December 21st, 2019. Rosary to begin at 9:30 a.m., followed by Mass, then graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, in honor of her memory, please send donations to Hospice Austin, 4107 Spicewood Springs Road, Suite 100, Austin, Texas, 78759. Gloria Hardesty. Gloria P. Hardesty, 93, of Pena, passed away Sunday, December 15, 2019, in Life's Journey, Pena. She was born May 28, 1926, in Westville, Illinois, daughter of the late Angelo and Pauline Juliana. Gloria married Wendell C. Chick Hardesty on May 29, 1950, having celebrated 69 years together earlier this year, and he survives in Pena, along with daughter Sherry Craig Mathewson, Pena, Illinois, 2 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren, and 1 nephew. In addition to her parents, she was preceded in death by her siblings, George Juliana, Anna Fava, Albert Juliana, Armin Juliana. Cremation rites will be accorded and no services are planned. Memorials in Gloria's honor may be made to Life's Journey in Pena, Illinois, and will be accepted by McCracken Dean Funeral Home, who is assisting the family. Major Enrique Pop Farias, Jr. Major Enrique Pop Farias, Jr. gave his final salute on Wednesday, December 11, 2019. Born October 12, 1939, in Delmida, Texas, he was the son of Enrique and Esther Garcia Farias. In addition to his beloved Olivia, he is survived by 4 children, 6 grandchildren, 3 brothers, and 2 sisters. Felicia Farias and Maggie Quirk of Austin, Rick and Janelle Farias of Miami, Florida, and their 2 children, Mark and Mary Farias of Tucson, Arizona, and their daughter, David and Sherry Farias, and their 3 children, of Leander, brothers Efrain Farias, Servando Farias, Serafin Farias, sisters Albisa Pena, Adelia Garcia. Enrique was preceded in death by his parents and sister, Ada Villarreal. Viewing and rosary for Enrique Farias Jr. will be Wednesday, December 18th, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m., held at the Gabriel's Funeral Chapel, 393 North I-35, Georgetown, Texas, 78628. There will be a final viewing on Thursday, December 19th, from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock a.m. at the Gabriel's Funeral Chapel, followed by the Mass at St. Helen Catholic Church, 2700 East University Avenue, Georgetown, Texas, at 10 o'clock a.m. Private cremains burial services will be at Fort Sam National Cemetery in San Antonio. The family requests donations in lieu of flowers be made to the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation or the American Cancer Society. Maxine Reynolds. Maxine Reynolds was called home to heaven on December 14, 2019. Maxine was born in Jacksonville, Texas on April 4, 1925. She is survived by her daughter, Tanza Brumfield, and husband, Ronnie, of Midland, and son, Jay, also of Midland. Maxine was preceded in death by her husband, Ken, a sister, Merle, and a brother, Grover. The family will receive visitors from 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, December 17, 2019, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland, Texas. A graveside service will be held on Wednesday, December 18, 2019, at 3 o'clock p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, with Don Mitchell officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to Meals on Wheels at 3301 Sinclair, Midland, Texas, 79707. The Lone Star Sanctuary for Animals at 4200 North Fairgrounds Road, Midland, Texas, 79705, or the charity of one's choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Nancy Jane White Penny. Nancy Jane White Penny, 86, passed from this life on December 15, 2019, after a lengthy illness. Born on January 3, 1933, to Roy and Amanda White in Jacksonville, Texas, she married Doyce Penny in Kilgore, Texas, on July 11, 1950. Her husband preceded her in death on May 9, 2015. She is survived by two sisters, Jeanette Bullock of Mission Viejo, California, and Annette Mayo of Jonesboro, Arkansas. Her son, Dave Penny, and daughter-in-law, Nancy Penny, both of Missouri City, Texas, and daughter, Becky Penny of Midland, Texas, as well as six grandchildren and nine great-grandchildren. A casual celebration of life, come-and-go reception, will be held at the Fellowship Hall of the Downtown Church of Christ on Friday, December 20th, 2019, from 11 o'clock a.m. to 12 o'clock p.m. A brief graveside service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. the same day at Rest Haven North Cemetery. An out-of-town memorial for the extended family is being planned for a later date. Instead of flowers, please send donations to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory. Death Notices. Beverly Ruth Copeland. Beverly Ruth Copeland, 87, of Midland, passed away Saturday, December 14, 2019, at Midland Memorial Hospital. The family will receive friends for visitation on Wednesday, December 18, from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held on Thursday, December 19, 2019, at 1 o'clock p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. A celebration of life will follow at 2 o'clock p.m. at St. Luke's United Methodist Church, with Reverend Tom Long officiating. Juanita Stokes. Juanita Stokes, 77, of Midland, passed away Monday, December 16, 2019, in Midland. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 o'clock p.m., Saturday, January 11, 2020, at the branch at NPW at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Juanita is survived by her son, Greg Stokes, and daughter, Madeline Stokes. This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. Assessment to help meet county's unique health needs. The health of a community is unique. A thumbprint of its makeup, it tells the story of the many unique and wonderful facets housed within its borders, as well as opportunities for growth. Midland Health conducts a community health needs assessment every 4 years to survey the overall health of Midland County. The assessment for fiscal years 2020 to 2022 was completed in August. The assessment included an extensive health data collection process and interview methodology. The results of the report guide Midland Health's focus and community outreach initiatives in the succeeding years. CHNA is comprised of qualitative and quantitative data. Health data is collected from a variety of sources, such as the U.S. Census, Center of Disease Control, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Midland County ranked 29 out of the 244 counties in Texas in 2019. Midland County was ranked 42 in the state in 2018. The Community Health Rankings report was conducted by the Johnson Foundation. The ranking considered length and quality of life of a county's residents, as well as health behaviors, social and economic factors, and clinical care. Individuals with special knowledge of public health in Midland County were interviewed during the data collection process. Interviewees were affiliated with state or local public health departments, organizations working with the medically underserved, and minority populations or local community leaders. Interviewees said the county's greatest needs were affordability of health care, the effects of local population growth, access to mental and behavioral health resources, and an increased need for community education. Midland Health determined 5 priorities from the assessment's findings. These priorities include the following, as well as a variety of ways Midland Health continues to enact change and progress. Prevention, education, and services to address high mortality rates, chronic diseases, preventable conditions, and unhealthy lifestyles. Midland Health believes education is a key component to our health as a community. We've created a robust outreach program as a pathway for education and interaction. The CHNA 2020 to 2022 encouraged the continued expansion of many of these successful programs. Our scientifically proven belief in lifestyle medicine has given us a passion for establishing accessible produce in our community for all. Midland Health opened Midland's first community garden in 2016 and partnered with Midland YMCA in 2017 to open a second location. Midland Health is working to expand its network of community gardens to a third location in 2020. In 2020, further expansion of other Midland Health outreach programs, such as wellness tour, on-site walking paths, and lifestyle medicine education, will drive impact and influence within Midland County. Access to affordable care and reducing disparities among specific populations. Midland Health also has identified specialty care procedures and programs to meet the unique needs of specific populations in Midland County. Midland Memorial Hospital is accredited as a Nurses Improving Care for Health System Elders facility with an established acute care for elderly nurse to provide specialty care for local elderly community members. Midland Health provides transportation vouchers on a limited basis for discharge patients who do not have a way to return home after being discharged from MMH and outpatient pharmacy services for the indigent population within Midland County. Increased emphasis on education and awareness of existing healthcare resources. Midland Health, as a health system, prioritized the development and promotion of innovative programs and resources. BasinMD, a telehealth platform that offers 24/7 medical care from anywhere using your smartphone, tablet, or computer. The platform provides a community member with a virtual visit, during which a healthcare provider can offer a diagnosis, treatment, and medication if appropriate. BasinMD launched in 2018 and continues to provide another way for Midland residents to receive quality care and avoid the emergency room. In partnership with Midland Community Healthcare Services, Midland Health promotes neighborhood-based programs informing high-risk populations about the ease of access and affordability of healthcare. Midland Health, along with MCHS and the March of Dimes, has a reoccurring campaign with an emphasis on the importance of prenatal medical care and local available resources, such as Hope Chest. Hope Chest is an incentive-based program for pregnant and parenting women, which encourages healthy behaviors during and after pregnancy. Increased emphasis on physician recruitment and retention. Midland Health actively and effectively recruits and retains physicians in a variety of specialties to ensure the system can meet the needs of all Midland County residents. In conjunction with the University of North Texas, Midland Health supports a fast-track family residency osteopathic medicine program with a focus on health promotion and disease prevention. Midland Health physician practice affiliates are also encouraged to engage in a collaborative specialty care recruitment of neurologists, OBGYN, ENT, pulmonologists, and other specialists as needs arise. Access to mental and behavioral health care services and providers. Midland Health, in partnership with Healthy Minds and the Behavioral Health Initiative, have continued to provide and expand services for our community members in need of behavioral health care or other local resources. Midland Health is working diligently to provide telepsychiatry services to assist with the crisis evaluation process. This includes the current crisis evaluation services and appropriate referrals for patients who present themselves at MMH. Midland County's health is a collaborative effort, which Midland Health believes through access to affordable care, education on resources, as well as preventable diseases, we will light the way to becoming the healthiest community in Texas. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Sports for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. Woman serving time fears boyfriend's love will fade. Dear Abby, I'm a 25-year-old female currently serving a 9-year prison sentence. It is the first time I have ever been in trouble. Wrong place, wrong time. My boyfriend is 24. We've been together 2.5 years and have had our ups and downs, mostly ups. I am truly in love with him, and he tells me he will always be there for me. I've been in prison for 5 months so far, and he hasn't missed a visit or a phone call. He also makes sure I have money on my books. I'm worried that somewhere down the road, since we're so young, he will meet someone and move on. In a way, I would kind of understand. I don't want his life to stop because mine has. But I also don't want to lose him. How do I keep our relationship strong, or should I let him go? Locked up in Delaware. Dear Locked Up, 9 years is a long time, and sometimes life happens in the interim. I can't predict what will happen, and you shouldn't either. Take things a day at a time, keep the lines of communication open and honest. Dear Abby, I love my wife. We have been married for 38 years. However, she does something that drives me crazy. I have a hard time going to sleep at night, and if I'm disturbed in those first few minutes of sleep, I'm up all night. We both agreed that when we say good night, it means no more talking or loud noises. But almost every night after saying good night, she wakes me up with something she has to say or explore. If it was an emergency, I wouldn't mind, but it's usually something of no consequence that could wait until morning. I have tried ignoring her, pretending to be asleep, saying goodnight again in a rough tone of voice, and getting angry. Nothing seems to work. I would appreciate some advice for dealing with this. Sleepless in Texas. Dear Sleepless, a solid night's sleep is crucial for good health. Tell your wife to keep a notepad by the side of the bed and jot down what she wants to discuss the next morning. However, if she persists in awakening you, get up and go into another room, and continue doing it until your wife agrees to show more consideration. Dear Abby, I have known my friend Midge for more than 60 years. We live in different states now, but keep in touch online. While our views are polar opposites on just about everything, we have remained friends. Over the last year, it seems Midge has reverted to being a wild teenager. She is smoking pot, got tattooed, and is doing a lot of partying. Recently, she posted a very lengthy missive, including dozens of pictures about how much she misses her ex-boyfriend. Abby, they broke up 10 years ago. I asked her sister about her bizarre behavior and was told, quote, oh, that's just Midge, end quote. Is it time to let go of the friendship? Not the same in California. Dear Not the Same, assuming the pot is legal in the state where Midge resides, she's doing nothing illegal, immoral, or that will get her pregnant out of wedlock.
Hello, this is Becky. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 17th, 2019, Section C. Dear Abby, birthday party guest list does not include newborn. Dear Abby, my brother and sister-in-law were trying to have a baby using artificial insemination. A few months into the very difficult pregnancy, they were told the baby had many life-threatening defects and asked if they wanted to terminate because the baby had little, if any, chance of surviving. They chose to carry the baby to natural birth. A month or so before she was due, she went into labor. The baby lived for only a few hours. They had a funeral, and it was a very sad event. A month later, on the due date, they started organizing a birthday party for their 10-year-old daughter and invited 30 to 40 people, young and old. They contacted my son and daughter-in-law, who had been pregnant at the same time and had given birth to a healthy baby, and asked them not to bring their newborn. Other babies a year old or older are invited. How should we respond? Leave the baby and my daughter-in-law at home, or refuse the invitation? Was it proper for my brother-in-law and his wife to throw a party and unwelcome a newborn? Lost in etiquette. Dear Lost, your brother-in-law and his family are in mourning. They have my deepest sympathy. If they felt it would be too painful after their loss to host a tiny baby at the birthday party, they should not be criticized. Your daughter-in-law should graciously refuse the invitation, saying she is sorry she will be unable to attend, and send a gift for the daughter. Dear Abby, what do you think of barbers or beauticians who take phone calls and continue to talk to the callers while doing a client's hair? I haven't said anything because I don't want an angry person cutting my hair. It's almost like having a doctor talk on the phone while doing surgery. What do you think? Hair raising in Illinois. Dear Hair Raising, a short conversation to book an appointment is one thing, but what you have described is just plain rude. The first time the beautician did it, you should have spoken up. Because you didn't, she or he thinks you don't mind. Hairdressing is a service business, and the clients in the chair should take priority. If you are really afraid your stylist would butcher your haircut in retaliation, if you complain, talk about passive-aggressive, find someone else to provide this service. Dear Abby, I have been a widow for 3 years. 16 years ago, my husband and I built a modest but nice home and worked very hard to pay off the mortgage early. I am constantly asked if I am going to stay in my home or if I plan to sell it. I have no intention of moving at this time or in the near future, if at all. Is there a good answer to give people when they keep asking this question? Do they think I am not capable of living in a house by myself? Any suggestions will be appreciated. Happy at home. Dear Happy, When someone asks that question, rather than become defensive, say, "Why do you ask?" Then let the person explain the reason behind it. Instead of implying that you are no longer capable of living alone, the questioner may be considering making an offer to buy it from you. Hello, this is Becky. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 17, 2019, the Education section. Take baby steps to overcome procrastination. Thomas Mueller, Trinity School. Just keep putting it off. Who has never said that? Of course, some of us tend to say that more often than others. And for students, the results can be pretty significant. Most teachers can recognize an assignment done as a rush job. So, what can we do about it? Well, we might turn to the experts and ask them. One such expert is Margarita Tartakovsky, associate editor of PsychCentral.com, and she spoke to a number of other experts in the field in order to produce a top 10 list of ways to overcome procrastination and complete everything from major projects to routine tasks. While her target audience was specifically individuals with attention deficit disorders, I think we could all benefit from some of her suggestions. There are a number of ways of taking baby steps that can have a big impact. While I won't list the entire top 10, there are three main actions that experts agree can have a big impact. Set aside some time every day or every week to accomplish a mini goal. This might be based on determining the priority of the task at hand. Creating a routine may be helpful. It may be that you notice there are best times for certain tasks. In any case, set aside a reasonable time to work on the project, then move on, unless you are inspired to keep going, which sometimes happens. Focus on long-term goals. Think about the relief of finishing the task. The alternative is the misery of having it hanging over your head all the time. It may be that the best time to make hay is when the sun shines. The best time to get started might be immediately. And the momentum of getting started may take you further than you imagined. Make use of technology. Google Calendar is a great free resource because there are plenty of built-in opportunities, such as adding reminders and creating tasks. There are also apps that work with Google Calendar to enhance its capabilities. Tarkowski recommends the free iPhone app Errands To Do List because it is so versatile. There are all sorts of time and task management apps available. I had the opportunity to ask a few junior high and high school students what they have found to be effective approaches for overcoming procrastination. Their top strategies were mostly among the expert tips. Prioritize, either by the importance of the task or the due date of the task. Create a routine, in which the same type of work is done at the same time each day. Chunk the work. For long-term projects, analyze the task, divide it into reasonable parts, set intermediate deadlines for completion. Alternate short periods of time between different types of tasks, such as hard work and easy work, or enjoyable work and difficult work, and program in breaks. Create external motivation. One student tells her parents when a big project is due so that they will nag her regularly. You have four choices when doing any task. Do it and don't enjoy it. Do it and enjoy it. Don't do it and enjoy it. Don't do it and don't enjoy it, said psychotherapist Stephanie Sarkis. The choice is yours. Thomas Mueller is assistant head of school for academics and a high school science teacher. Hello, this is Becky. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, December 15th, 2019, the Culture section. A piece of Odessa history comes to light. Odessa. Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm has had his eyes set on renovating and creating a public art piece using the Cloth World sign ever since the public art master plan was created in 2014. His vision has come true with the lighting ceremony for the Odessa Spire planned for 6:45 p.m. Monday at 808 Maple Avenue. In 2014, we commissioned a public art master plan for the city of Odessa, Ham said. During the research of that, we did a lot of community input meetings where we invited the public to tell us what they wanted to see in a public art program for Odessa. In almost every single meeting we went to, somebody asked if something could be done with the Cloth World Tower. People told Odessa Arts during the meetings that the Cloth World sign was part of history and it was sitting there neglected and rusted, Ham said. They didn't want to see it torn down, but it was an eyesore. The sign is so old that when Ham went to find drawings for it at the city, they couldn't find them. It was originally built as the sign for Rock Hill Springs Shopping Center, he said. It was constructed in the late 1950s or early 60s. Then it became the Cloth World sign in the 1970s, when Cloth World moved into the shopping center. PAC committee member Richard Gillum and Pinky's owner Austin Keith convinced the sign owner, Keith Utzinger, to donate the sign to the city of Odessa, making it a part of the city's collection, Ham said. The city then gave Odessa Arts $100,000 to commission a piece of art, Ham said. The next step was to put out a call for artists. 75 artists from around the country applied for the commission. That number was then narrowed down to 3 finalists, he said. Ray King, from Philadelphia, was the only artist that we thought honored the architecture of this piece while bringing it into the 21st century, Ham said. We had our artist, we had our sign, but we needed a lot of money to get the structure ready. The sign had been abandoned for more than 20 years, with lead paint and rust, he said. We didn't know if it was going to be able to handle putting a piece of art in it, Ham said. We did some surveying, and at that point we realized it was a massive undertaking and bigger project than we thought. Toby and Sandra Eoff, the owners of the new Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, went to Odessa Arts with the first $100,000 needed to begin the project, he said. That opened the floodgates to have the FMH Foundation, the Permian Basin Area Foundation, RIA Charitable Trust, Wood Family Foundation, J.C. Ferguson Foundation, Bryant Family Foundation, Hext Foundation, and all of these community members started donating to this structure, Ham said. He said that since the structure is so ingrained in the history of the community, Odessa Arts started perceiving sentimental donations from people happy the sign will be preserved. I think it speaks to the goodwill and investment that the community has in the project, Ham said. He said that when all is said and done, the Odessa Spire will have cost $750,000. King's vision for the Odessa Spire made him a great choice for the preservation and renovation of the public art piece, Ham said. I love the sign as a piece of mid-century architecture, and I love mid-century design, Ham said. He, King, didn't really alter it, while some of the artists wanted to alter the structure a lot. He wanted to preserve it and use it as a lighted piece of art. I like the idea of an illuminated spire, which is kind of like a West Texas Eiffel Tower. Public art consultants Dyson and Womack from Los Angeles were the project managers. Ham said that having someone from the public arts field manage the project was instrumental in getting the project moving and moving quickly. The contractor started on August 1st and finished their remediation around November 10th. King and his team arrived on November, finished the installation on December 1st. It was pretty smooth, but there was one instance when we found a little more corrosion than we thought we were going to, which necessitated some additional welding repairs. Ham said, "For me, to have only one change order from the whole remediation was so great, because once we got on the paint off the structure, we didn't know what we were going to find." He said the best part during construction was when they did a test lighting of the spine. One night, while Ray King and his team were finishing up the project, they did a short 15-minute test lighting of the Odessa Spire, Ham said. I got to sit there and watch it illuminate for the first time, and it choked me up a little bit. Ham said the Odessa Spire is giving residents an icon they can claim for years to come. It is going to change the way we talk about public art, Ham said. Most people, when they think of public art, they think of murals and bronze statues. There is nothing wrong with murals or bronze statues, but there is so much more we can do in addition to that. I am really excited by the response we have had. Ham said he feels exhausted but very proud that the Odessa Spire is finished. It is something that I have been living with for a while in my head, and to actually see it for real, it makes it almost surreal, he said. I hope that this very publicly driven piece of public art speaks to generations to come. I hope people are talking about it in 25 years. Lighting the Odessa Spire. The ceremony will start Monday at 6:45 p.m. at 808 Maple Avenue, near Pinky's Liquor. Maple Avenue from 10th Street to 8th Street and 10th Street from Dixie Boulevard to Echo will be closed to traffic beginning at 3 p.m. Voices of the Permian Basin Choir will perform at 6:50 p.m., followed by remarks from Randy Ham, State Representative Brooks Landgraf, and Odessa Mayor David Turner. Toby and Sandra Eoff will flip the switch and light the spire at 7:45 p.m. Having kids is worth all the hard, messy stuff. Melanie Nicholas, columnist. My friend Ashley posted a picture to Facebook of her elementary-age son in the car. His smile was huge as he was getting ready to celebrate his birthday. Ignoring his shining eyes and the enormous fake mustache he was wearing, his Aunt Kim asked, "He's adorable, but what happened to the roof of your car?" Ashley's light tan upholstery was splattered with dark brown streaks and dots, like a mischievous Jackson Pollock had decorated the car with a spittoon and turkey baster. And I just laughed and laughed some more. Kim is one of the most successful people I've ever known. She is brilliant and driven. She travels all over the world and leads a team of people and kajillion-dollar projects. Like many overachievers, she is an avid runner. She is funny and beautiful, but even more beautiful on the inside. She is also a brand new mama and has absolutely no idea what her life is about to look like. Ashley explained that a soda had exploded in the car, but I told Kim the actual truth of the matter because she needs to know. Kids, I said. Kids happened to that car. Kim, consider me an expert. Kids and car disasters is one of my many specialties. I've actually had to trade in cars because of my little ones, and I know I am not the only one. I wonder if there is some statistician out there keeping a record of all the stinks of rotten yogurt and old fry mobiles that are traded in every day. My sweet midnight blue Hyundai Santa Fe was the first casualty. It was a midsize, peppy SUV, perfect for commuting and car seats. I just loved driving it. It was so cute, too, until one uncomfortably hot summer day when the hubs and I were too lethargic to pay attention to a 3-year-old bodacious in the back seat. She was quietly chatting to herself, and Molten Mom just couldn't tear her face from the AC vent to check on her. It wasn't until the car came to a stop and I opened her door to let her out that I noticed a handful of sweaty permanent markers rolling around in the back seat. My artsy angel had happily scribbled all across her window and onto the 2-foot square area of tan fabric that covered her door. She was so very proud of her work, blue and black and red arcs and dots as far as her little arms could reach. No amount of magic eraser was going to help, so we didn't even try. The hubs got me a Ford Flex next. It was my favorite car. A gorgeous shoebox on wheels with all the bells and whistles. We even updated to tan leather, and I was in heaven. Unfortunately, little son left a sippy cup full of milk in the third row. Unbeknownst to me, it rolled around and eventually wedged itself firmly under the seat. Baking in the hot West Texas sun, down highways and byways, that milk began to froth, curdle, and ferment. Now, if you've ever had a milk bottle go rogue, you know exactly what I'm talking about. No amount of crawlings in the back ever produced the cup, but every time I opened the door, It was like a giant hairy log of goat cheese slapped me across the face, burning my eyes and making my breath catch. I was not so secretly thrilled when the Stinkmobile was totaled and I ended up with a Cadillac. I didn't get to drive the Caddy long enough for my kids to ruin it, because it was totaled in a spectacular not-my-fault crash on Route 66. After that, I got one of those small Lexus SUVs, but eventually commandeered a Ford Navigator because my kids and dogs got too big for the Lexus. Last summer, coming home from the grocery, the dogs got a little too excited and jumped on the bag containing a gallon of milk and a carton of half and half. When 160 pounds lands on milk jug, the jug usually loses the fight. I have tried valiantly to mop up the milk, but it has gotten into every crack and crevice. No amount of baking soda or vacuuming can get the soured milk stench out of the car. I have been too cheap to take it to get detailed, and keep thinking, how much longer can the smell last? 15 months and counting. That's how long. My precious husband decided to try our luck one more time last spring when he bought me another Lexus for our anniversary. It was beautiful, dark gray on the outside, tan leather inside, fancy on-screen navigation, and a sunroof. Our sweet neighbors were selling it for a new body style, and they had taken meticulous care of it. It still had the new car smell, y'all. Meticulous, I protested. It's just too nice, I said. We can't have nice things, we just can't. My words fell on deaf ears. He bought it anyway, and it was showroom floor perfect for exactly 8 weeks. Then we took it to Abilene to see my mom for the July 4th holiday. We were on the interstate, on that lonely stretch between Abilene and Sweetwater, when Bodacious began to erupt. Food poisoning, tempered with orange Fanta. I won't ruin your breakfast with the details. Suffice it to say, I needed to purchase new floor mats. After changing my clothes on the road, on the side of the road, I got back into the car and looked at the hubs. I was wiping my arm and hands very carefully with the last baby wipe. I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. We can't ever have nice things. So, sweet Kim, let me assure you having kids is wonderful. It is the very best thing in this world. It will be hard and beautiful. Sometimes it will even be messy and stink to high heaven. But it is so worth it. And I just know you are going to be an amazing mother. Trust me when I say don't sweat the small stuff. Nearly everything is replaceable. But you might want to consider black interior, leather seats, and rubber floor mats when you get your next car. Melanie Nicholas is a full-time mama and rider. She and the Hubs have two amazing children, Parksalot 11 and Bodacious 8. You can follow her amazing adventures fighting grime and insecurity on Facebook, Instagram, and www.melanienicholas.com. Her column appears in the Midland Reporter Telegram every other week. Jeanette Castanon, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. Poinsettia spread Christmas cheer. Poinsettias are famous for their beautiful red and green Christmas colors and are extremely popular and festive this time of the year. They're available in many local grocery stores and bring so much Christmas cheer. Poinsettias are native to Mexico and can grow up to 10 feet tall when planted in the ground. In Mexico, the plant is known as La Flor de la Nochebuena, Flower of the Holy Night. Poinsettias are known as Euphorbia pulcherrima. Many plants in the Euphorbiaceae or spurge family ooze a milky sap. Many people with latex allergies have had skin reactions when touching the leaves because of this sap. It is advised to keep your pets away from the plant, because ingestion of the leaves can cause stomach irritation and lead to vomiting and diarrhea. The poinsettia is commonly thought of as a large flower, but the red showy part is a modified leaf called bract. The yellow flowers are at the center of the bracts, and when these flowers shed their pollen, the bracts will drop. For a long-lasting poinsettia, find a plant with the least amount of yellow pollen showing. There are more than 100 varieties of poinsettias available. They come in pink, white, yellow, purple, salmon-colored, as well as multicolored. Although these options exist, the classic red still dominates the market. poinsettias contribute more than $250 million to the U.S. economy.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.